Apologies, we have one final question. It's virtual, if you can look at the camera.
Oh, I see.
From
okay.
News Talk Irish Radio.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Hi, Killian.
Ah.
Henry McKean here from News Talk Radio Ireland, coming from a pool top bar celebrating you. Congratulations.
Good for you.
I just wanted to ask you, are you going to sing a rebel song? And how does it feel to be the first Irish-born man to win Best Actor?
Well, it's really, really meaningful to me. And I don't know if I said this in my speech because I can't remember what I said, but I did want to say, you know, that I think in Ireland, you know, we're really great at supporting artists, and I think we need to continue to support artists and the next generation of actor and director. I think that's vitally important. That's all I have to say, really.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Congratulations.
My favourite bit of that whole clip, Henry, was when he was told, you know, look at the camera, okay, right, the News Talk, he goes, okay, yeah. And then when you said, Killian, and he goes, ah, when the penny drops, it's Henry McKean. I know that voice. Everyone knows that voice. They know it in Hollywood, Henry. Yeah.
This road policing unit is based in Delvin, in a quite a small town there, just on the Meath-West Meath border. And it comes down to, believe it or not, a can of deodorant was being sprayed in the car, and the guards found this suspicious.
So I'm just going to make a requirement today under Section 9 of the Road Traffic Act 2010 to provide me with a specimen of your oral fluid, okay, in a manner which I'm going to indicate you. This is a DW6S drugs wipe. I'm going to open it up here now. It's like a cassette, similar to that of a COVID test is what it would remind you of, if you remember them. Okay, what this does is it tests for cannabis, benzos, amphetamines, methamphetamines, opiates and cocaine. I have to inform you, it is an offence to fail or refuse to comply with this requirement. There's a €5,000 fine or 6 months imprisonment, or both fine and imprisonment. And do you understand, in simple language, ordinarily, this is a test for drug driving.
Right.
Yeah, you understand? Do you?
Yeah,
perfect.
Sorry, yeah.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to remove this blue part of the cassette here. I'm going to ask you, in the manner of what I'm going to show you, would you run your tongue around the inside of your mouth 3 times on each cheek, like this?
Yeah.
And then open your mouth wide and stick your tongue out. I'm going to contact these pads here. They're a pinky colour. They'll go yellow when they have enough saliva connected, okay?
Yeah.
So you can see they've changed colour because they've collected saliva, okay?
Right, okay, yeah.
So I'm going to put them into this device here. I'm going to click them in. Okay, and then there's an ampule in here, has chemicals in it, which will react with your saliva, okay? So I'm going to break that ampule now. You can hear it crunching. Okay, so I count to 10. So I just ask you to remain in your vehicle here, and we're going to wait for this. This will react with your saliva. It'll show red lines, like a COVID test, if there's positives for drugs. I'd ask you not to drink or take anything just at the moment, okay? My colleague's going to continue just doing her checks on your documents while I wait for this. Is that okay?
The man was spraying deodorant when you stopped him, and you were a bit suspicious.
That's correct. So my colleague Lindsay stopped the vehicle just a moment ago. As we're conducting a checkpoint here outside Delvin, and as the vehicle approached, there was a strong, strong overpowering smell of deodorant, and then the driver admitted that he had just deployed a can of deodorant in the vehicle. Oftentimes that is done, in our experience, to mask something else they don't want us to smell. So from digging a little bit deeper then, we've discovered a few road traffic offences. He doesn't have his licence with him, and a few other documentary offences. So we've invoked Section 9 of the Road Traffic Act. I've made a requirement of him here for his oral fluid, and I've done the test here now, and we'll know soon enough, within a couple of minutes, whether there is any drugs in his system.
Just a routine traffic stop. We're here at a checkpoint, and I asked the gentleman for his driving license, but as soon as he opened the window of the vehicle, I could smell Lynx, or a very strong spray of some description. And when I brought this to his attention, I said, all I can smell is a spray coming from the vehicle. He had it in the side pocket, and he has admitted to us here the reason that he has sprayed that is because he does smoke cannabis, and just to mask the smell.
Oh, wow, that is really interesting. Hmm. I mean, the bang of links sets off alarm bells for me in any situation. But that is fascinating, though, that they're so used to it that they realised, oh, my God, if there's a bang of links Africa in the car, you've got problems on your hands.
Well, or any deodorant or aftershave. And I thought, you know, we use these things to try and mask smells of ourselves. But you know.
Well, we all do that, Henry, you spray something to mask a smell you don't want others to.
And I can understand
why. Experience, let's be honest.
Why? Because the smell of hash was so strong. You know, I can almost still smell it from my clothes now. It kind of stays with you.
So anyway, it was trouble for that fella, as we heard there towards the end of that clip. You spoke to other motorists as well in Dublin. I mean, what's the attitude to drug driving?
Yeah, it turns out it seems to be quite commonplace. I met this lady. She's now been drug-free and drink-free for the past 8 weeks. She's doing really well. She talks about driving with cocaine in her system.
So did you ever get behind the wheel?
Yeah, a good few times. I did.
With a bit of cocaine and alcohol in your system?
Yeah.
And does it affect your driving if you take a bit of cocaine?
Yeah, it does. Honestly, yeah, it does. Do you know, one time I had to ring my partner just to talk to me just so that I could concentrate on the road.
And we're going to go over here and look at the rat traps. So we've got lots of rat traps here.
They're all in disinfectant. They're getting ready for tonight.
Yeah.
And so they are traditional rat traps. They're
Elf
wooden.
Elf Lanahan's. We got them. Yeah.
And what do you feed them?
Mars bars.
They like Mars bars.
They love
the
Mars bars.
The only thing that they're eating now, the traps.
They don't like peanut butter.
Melts in it. They're not eating.
They don't eat cheese.
No.
So Marses, they like them.
Mars bars, yeah.
And that works.
Working a trick.
And the bins are actually locked away and they're organised. So they normally go for food.
They only built that there a couple of months ago. That's the worst thing that happened.
The bins.
Getting built. Where bins was just sitting freely. There was never a rat issue when the bins was like that.
So you think it's the new bin area that's doing it, maybe?
It's hiding them. Like, we're the next generation of these flats. The generation before us is after doing this for us, so I'm doing it for my children, because they're the next upcoming generation. Like, great people come from these flats, and there's people slating us that we're this and we're that. We're not. We're like a powerhouse
because
in here.
Because the place is clean.
Yeah, because we don't let the kids vandalise it. We don't.
You can really get a sense, Henry, of the frustration of the residents.
Oh, Kieran, huge, huge frustration. They're at their wits' end. They're angry. They're disappointed. They're tired. And it's dark right now, wherever you are in Ireland. And the rats, some of them as big as Jack Russells, they're coming out to play in the darkness. Here's some frustration.
Dublin Corporation want to get their finger out, start looking after what's up here. Not what they're putting into it, not new tenants, because they're walking into beautiful homes. They want to start looking at the tenants that is here, right? And for the playground, the half a playground, the rats can't even come down the slide because it's not slidey. A half of a slidey gave the kids. No swings. That contraption, the water tank is up there. There's no swings for kids. A half of a playground, two umbrellas. That's it. You can't let a child into it. It's piggy dirty. Piggy dirty, that's all. I wouldn't, if I had grandchildren, my grandchildren wouldn't be in it, and that's that. Now, Ormond Square has a lovely playground, gorgeous, but we can't keep bringing our kids around to Ormond Square. We don't live there, we live here. The Bala, they got a new playground. But we can't bring the kids over there either, because they're drug addicts and there's drinkers in it.
Are they getting into the houses? Are you worried they'll get in?
Not at the moment, but because everybody is locking up now. Everybody is locking up. But Jodie's on the bottom. Becky's on. That's her bedroom. And who's to say that they can't get in there? And she's a baby in the car. Who should wake up one morning and they'd be on top of the baby and a rose? You can't have that. Do you know what I mean? Because if they smell the milk off her from a bottle, they're going to just chew her. What's she going to do for any rose? She's not going to make another one. Is the corporation going to give her one? No. No.
You filled a bag of rats?
Yeah.
And what did you do with the bag?
I left the bag at the PAL. I put them in a Dublin City Council bag, addressed for Dublin City Council. And when she arrived, Marion and Jennifer, I said, there's a bag of rats for you. And she just walked by them.
She didn't want them?
No, she didn't want them. I don't want them.
I think I'm going to stop saying I'm from Ireland. I'm going to say I'm Irish.
Yeah.
Because I'm now officially Irish, according to this document that's on really fancy paper.
Yeah.
Why
did you decide? Because you have been here for a long time.
Yes.
Is it related to your son, do you think? Is there a feeling?
I think I feel more grounded.
Now?
Yeah. And obviously my son was born
in February the 16th, 2018. So just over 5 years ago in Holler Street. And the midwives were just fantastic. And I think that made me feel far more grounded and far more Irish. And I just think at this stage, Ireland is my home. I'm not going anywhere. I still love travelling the globe, despite the environmental issues around that. I still absolutely love that. But Ireland is my home. And, you know, obviously, in the soccer tonight, there's a big match and I'll be supporting Ireland. And then obviously the Rugby World Cup is starting at the weekend and I'll be supporting Ireland. So I think maybe it's all the sport going on. And the fact that the document landed, the postman, delivered it, Brendan. Big thanks to Brendan and On Post out there who have to do this job. And the guards, I've got every signature that I need now to actually put all of this in the post box and get my Irish passport, which I've been told will take 20 days if there's no delay.
Yeah. Actually, the real sign of being Irish isn't a piece of paper.
Yeah.
It's because you know your postman's first name. That's Irish. There's no more sign of Irishness than that.
Brian McMahon, the presiding judge, he talked about this declaration of fidelity, which we all have to do. And I actually have it here. These are the words.
Oh, read it. What is it?
So I've got to say, I, Henry McKean, my address. And then I have to go on and say, having applied to the Minister for Justice for a certificate of naturalisation, hereby solemnly declare my fidelity to the Irish nation and my loyalty to the state. I undertake to faithfully observe the laws of the state and to respect its democratic values. Sorry, I'm getting a bit choked up there. But we all had to do that, all 1,000 of us, in front of the judge. And it really was just so moving and so beautiful and brilliant, brilliant pomp put on by the Irish state today. And I just want to also thank my grandmother under the granny rule that made me Irish. Thanks, granny. That's Anna Millerick, based down there, all the way down in East Cork, in Ballycotton. A big thank you to you. I know she died in 87, but anyway, here is the judge, Brian McMahon.
Hello, this is my name is Brian McMahon. I'm the presiding officer at the New Citizen Ceremony here in the Convention Centre in Dublin.
Judge, you've gone through the process there. I'm now an Irish citizen. Tell us about some of the things you talked about. You talked about the hurl. You talked about, owning your past and remembering your past, but also the future, and contributing to Irish society.
Yeah, well, I feel very strongly that people, when they're taking new citizenship in Ireland, sometimes erroneously think that they're being disloyal to the country they come from and that they have to give up something. I view this as a transactional exchange between cultures, and that there is no need for new citizens in this country to forget their past. And I urge them to bring their songs, their stories and their music with them. That's part of their heritage, and we don't want people who have cut off their own cultural roots. So that's the first part. I welcome that. And secondly, I must emphasise to them, of course, that they have an obligation as new citizens to integrate fully with our culture, because we have a rich culture too. And I ask them to read our literature, I ask them to listen to our music and play our games.
And pick up a hurl.
And pick up a hurl, which is not an offensive weapon in this country.
We stayed the night, and the next morning when he was sober, I just said, look, like, let's just end on good terms. Let's just try end this here. And went absolutely berserk again, like completely uplifted my room. Like the room was unrecognisable. So that morning he left, he took my passport, my keys and a couple of bits with him that were mine. I think that was also to control me, because I was supposed to go on holidays, and if I knew he had a key, that'd make me feel really unsafe. My parents came home and I didn't have enough time to clean. They would have seen my room and the blood on the walls, because I was trying to like clean and do it as frankly as possible, but it just wasn't enough. And when my mum came in straight away, she said, like, was this Jake? And I was like, yeah, and I just bawled. And she said, did he hurt you? Did he force himself on you? And I was like, no, I was still trying to protect him, still trying to, like, I don't know why I was trying to protect him. I think I just have it in me that I don't want to hurt anyone, and I always have the fear of hurting someone. So I was like, no, it wasn't him. So we cleaned my room, and the next morning on the way to work, I just cried, and I was just like, Mom, I can't do this anymore. I have photos, I have times and dates of when he did it to me, and he's been hurting me for the last couple of years, whether it be physical or emotional, and we went to my nanny's and we called the guards. But like, that wasn't, that was just one incident. Like, that was every weekend. Like, that was day in, day out. Like, there wasn't a weekend where it was happy from start to beginning. There was always a bump in the middle. There was always some sort of argument, whether it be physical or emotional. It was always manipulated. Even when we were going on a holiday, if I didn't want to go, he said that he would go over, kill himself, and leave a note to say it was my fault. Like, he pinned me down and hold a knife to his neck. So in my head, as a 17-year-old girl, I'm thinking, well, if he's sitting on me with a knife to his neck and about to hurt himself, and he's punching himself so hard in the face that he's black and blue with lumps, he will hurt himself, and it's my fault. But it wasn't, and like, it takes a lot of time to realise that. But I also had the fear of, well, he's going to tell people that I'm doing it. No one, he would always tell me, no one's ever going to believe you. So, like, it took a lot for me to tell people, but in the end, with a lot of help, you realise that no, it isn't your fault.
It's the 80th anniversary of D-Day this year. On the 6th of June 1944, the largest combined land, air and naval operation in history happened, considered to be one of the greatest triumphs by the Allied forces during World War II. 156,000 troops landed by sea and air on the north coast of France to liberate mainland Europe from the Nazis. And Henry McKean's granddad landed on Sword Beach 80 years ago.
I'm here in Normandy, and that is the sound of the waves. 80 years ago, the D-Day landings happened on this beach and many beaches nearby, as the Allies finally confronted the Nazis to beat tyranny on mainland Europe. 80 years ago, my granddad landed here with hundreds and hundreds of other troops, and he survived. But many, including Irish, died at this very spot.
Well, Henry joins me now. Henry, tell me about your granddad.
Pat, yeah, my granddad, George Borney from Jersey, which is just off Normandy. He joined the army in 1939 when war broke out, and he married my grandma on Stephen's Day in 1939 in Jersey. My granny was an Irish nurse from just outside Middleton in Cork, Anne Millerick, and they met at the hospital ball in Jersey General in 1937. And believe it or not, he actually went back to rescue her, to put her on the last ferry to England before the Germans occupied Jersey. He rose through the ranks quite quickly. And remember, there was Sword Beach where he was being shot at. And he always said that the film Saving Private Ryan, that was filmed in Wexford, was the closest there was to the devastation on that day. There was Utah Beach, Omaha Beach, Gold, Juno and Sword. And I got to take the Stena Vision Ferry from Rosslare and then drove to the beach where my grandpa landed 80 years ago, Pat.
Now, your granddad has passed, but mm-hmm. you got more information from your mother. What did she have to say?
I did. My mum gave me the background to my granddad and basically helped me fill in some of those gaps from the past. And remember, they must have been so brave to do what they did. Here is my mum, Rosemary McKean, talking about her dad, Major George Borney.
Your dear grandpa, Major George Francis Borney from Jersey, aged 28 years, and my darling father was heavily involved in the horrors of D-Day on Tuesday, June the 6th, 1944, 80 years ago, Operation Overlord. He and his company of the RASC, Royal Army Service Corps, left their amphibious landing craft about 7:30 a.m. onto Sword Beach in Normandy. They encountered a barrage of heavy machine gun fire from the German pillboxes. Thousands of British and Allied soldiers perished or were seriously injured. The beach was also heavily mined. My father chose to leap early from the ramp into deep water with his men to avoid enemy fire. But as a young girl growing up, and like most veterans, he was reluctant to share his war experiences with me. However, you and your three brothers tried to quiz him often. It was only in November 2002, close to Remembrance Sunday, a few weeks before your grandfather died, whilst caring for him, that he divulged the graphic details to your father, Hamish, of the hell that he and others faced on D-Day and after. By the grace of God, it was a miracle that he survived. The hellish hand-to-hand combat. It was kill or be killed. Lest we forget the ultimate sacrifice that the Allied and British forces made for the victory on the Western Front. Your grandfather will be delighted that you, Henry, visited Sword Beach close to the 80th anniversary of D-Day 2024.